Welcome to Gemara Marking. Today's shiur is of Avodah Zarah Daf Nun Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. The Gemara that we are picking up with is found on the top line of Nun Beis. It, in effect, is a quote from that which was seen on Daf Nun Aleph Omid Beis. We assist you in finding the quote by noting a star to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. Between the Gemara and the Tosfos, you see a star with a indication that you should look at Nun Aleph Amud Beis. If you scan down Nun Aleph Amud Beis on the same side of the Gemara text, namely the left-hand side, you'll notice a star with an indication that we would go to Nun Beis Amud Aleph. This quote is referring to a pasuk that was in Devarim, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Beis, where the expression appears, Abei Tavdun es kol hamakoymois asher avdu shom hagoyim. That's the Pasuk, and with that, the top line of Nun Beis picks up with a Tanaic source, which is a quote from the source on Nun Aleph and Beis. You can see it's framed off as we frame off all Tanaic material in our marking system. The Gemara says, Mikan Omru, from here we say, now from here is a reference to the pasuk of Abei Tabdun es kol hamakoymos. From here we say, Avodas Kechavim shel Oyvei Kechavim eino asura elo ad sheteavei. An idol belonging to a Gentile is not forbidden until it's actually worshipped. V'shel Yisrael miyad. And if it's an idol owned by a Jew, then it is usur, it is forbidden, even before it's actually worshipped. It's usur immediately. The Gemara asks, how can the source say that? V'ha bekelim ukimna la. The pasuk was established as referring to vessels that are used in service of idols, and not the idols themselves. Omar Kro, Asher Atem Yorshim Oisom Es Elohehem. The same Pasuk, that's Dvarim Yud Beis, Pasuk Beis, says in the continuation of it, it talks about the area that you are going to inherit. It says, Oisom Ves Elohehem. Makish Elohehem Lakelim. Since we established that the expression Mekomos is a reference to vessels, the same Pasuk also says, Oisom. So, Osam is compared to Elohim. Ma, the Osam, of course, is a reference to, as we mentioned, the vessels, because that's a pronoun referring to the Mekomos, which is a reference to the vessels, and it also says Elohim. So we see in this pasuk to compare Makish Elohim Lekelim. We compare Elohim, which you see explicitly, to Osam, which is a pronoun referring to the Kelim. Ma Kelim Ad Shiavdu, just like the vessels are not forbidden until they're used in service of the idol. Af Elohim, so to the idols themselves of the Gentiles, Nami Ad Shiavdu, they too are forbidden only once they are worshipped. And that's what you see on the second line from the top of this omid. It said it's Shel Oved Kochavim, the idols of the Gentiles, Eino Asura Elo Ad Sheteaved. Rabbi Akiva, the Lo Makish, Rabbi Akiva who holds, and we saw his shita as well, we saw his opinion on the bottom of Nun Aleph Amud Beis, he holds that the idol of a Gentile is also immediately. So Rabbi Kiva de lo Sovar, de lo Makish, Rabbi Kiva does not compare vessels to the idols. In what sense? In the sense that the idols of a Gentile are also immediately. The vessels are also are forbidden only once they are used. So why is it that he doesn't compare? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Kiva delo makish omarloch. Rabbi Kiva will tell you, es hifsik hoinian. The word es that's in the pasuk. Notice you can see just by following the arrows that we have to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara. If you look two lines up, you'll see the S with dotted underline, as we have it here at the end of this line. The word S, hifsikoinian, serves to block, to be a separation between the oisom word, the pronoun which was a reference to vessels, and the word following S, the idols themselves. So Rabbi Kiva does not compare them, and there's a double standard or a different standard. Whereas Rabbi Kiva will say the idols of the Gentiles are usur immediately, the vessels are forbidden only once they are used in service. Rabbi Yishmael, Ashkichon avodis kechavim shel oyved kechavim di'ein asura ad shete oved. At this point, the Gemara is simply reviewing Rabbi Yishmael's opinion, and that is that the idol of a Gentile is usur only once it's served. The Yisrael, the asura miyad min olay, part of Rabbi Yishmael's shita that was seen on Nun Aleph Amid Bey, said that an idol owned by a Jew is usur immediately. We have an arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text indicating Nun Aleph Amid Beis. If you scan down to the bottom part of Nun Aleph Amid Beis, you will see an arrow where there's a note Nun Beis Amid Aleph. On that line, you see the expression Asur Miyad, and that's a reference to Rabbi Shmuel's Shita, that the idol of a Jew is also immediately upon its construction, and not having to wait until it's actually worshipped. Where does Rabbi Yishmael get that from? That's the question now. The Gemara answers, Savorahu. It's a point of logic. Mida oivid kechovim ad shete aved, from the fact that the idol belonging to a Gentile is also only once it's worshipped, the Yisrael asura miyad. The Jewish-owned idol is different. It is also immediately. Here we see triangles, a new geometric form as far as the sugya is concerned. Let's take a look at the side, the outside margin. You notice there's a mivneh. The diamond, which we should have mentioned earlier, highlights avodah zarah shel Yisrael v'shel goy. So where you see the word, we see a diamond in expression, it's a reference to the idol itself, belonging to either Yisrael or goy. The triangles here are kushios, hatsos, chilufios. They represent questions whereby there are alternative suggestions being presented. For example, right now, the Gemara asks, Emo, the Yisrael, klal uklal lo. Let us suggest that once you say that the Jewish-owned idol has a different standard than the Gentiles, a Gentile-owned idol, true, by the Gentile-owned idol, you said it's also only once it's served, maybe the Jewish-owned idol is never forbidden. The Gemara responds to that. That can't be. Hashto geniza baya. Now, as we know, that a Jewish-owned idol needs to be buried. Itzurei lo mitzura. Can you suggest that it's not forbidden? Of course it's forbidden. Otherwise it wouldn't need to be buried. V'emo kida oved kochavim. Why not say that the same standard applies, just like the Gentile-owned idol is also once it's served, so too the Jewish-owned idol. It should be usur only once it's served. Omar Kro, the Gemara answers, the Pasuk says, V'es chataschem asher asisem es ha'egel. The Pasuk here is talking about the golden calf, and it emphasizes that it's forbidden, Mish'as asiyo kom le'bechet. From the a point of construction, there's already sin. So we see that it's forbidden from the point of its construction, the asiya. Question, Emo hani mili lamekam gavro b'chait. Maybe the pasuk is saying that the person who does it is guilty of a sin. However, itzuri lo mitzura, but the item itself isn't forbidden. Omar Kro, there's another pasuk that says Oru Ha'ish Asher Ya'aseh Peselu Masecha. And we darshan from here, Mishas Asiya Kom Leboro, from the point of its making. As you can see, we've dashed underlined the word Ya'aseh. From the point that it's made, there is already curse. Question: Emo Hani Milu Lemekam Gavro Boro. A very similar question like that which was raised just a couple lines earlier. You can see we have the same dashed underline as appeared three lines up. Maybe the pasuk, this Orah pasuk, is referring specifically to the person that, from the point of making, there is the person is cursed worthy. It's Suri Lo Mitzra, but the item itself is not forbidden. So the Gemara answers, Toyavas Hashem Ksiv. In that pasuk, you find the expression Toavas Hashem. This is a reference to the idol itself is an abomination. So we see that from the point of making, that's what we meant before Asura Miyad. From the point of making, it is already forbidden. Now, Rabbi Akiva, who does not forbid the Jewish owned idol immediately, but rather once it's worshipped, what does he do with this expression Toavas Hashem? For Rabbi Akiva, he explains, Dovar Hamevi Lidei Toeva. The person is cursed worthy from the point of making, because it is something that is going to bring about abomination when it is served. Rabbi Akiva, Avodas Kechavim Shel Oivei Kechavim De Asura Miyad Min Olei. Where does Rabbi Akiva know that the Gentile-owned idol is forbidden upon immediately, before its worship? That means upon its construction. Min Olei, from where does he know that? Notice with the markings how it's easy to find the topic under discussion. For example, the issue of the Gentile-owned idol, as far as Rabbi Shmuel was concerned, that you can see by glancing up, scanning up to find a diamond. You see the word Elohim, and we have written in Shel Goyim. Shel Goyim means the Gentile-owned idol, and here we have the word Oved Kechavim as a reference also to Gentile-owned, and we mentioned that the diamonds are featuring idols. So here we have Miyad, squiggle underlined. That means the idol is also immediately, as opposed to above, where you saw the idol of the Goyim was Ashi Abdu, also squiggle underline, once it's worshipped. That was Rabbi Shmuel. Here we're dealing with Rabbi Akiva. So where does Rabbi Akiva know this immediate prohibition that sets upon the idol of a Goy, of a Gentile? Omar Ulo, Omar Kro, Psile Elohim Tisrefun Boesh, Mishe Posloi Naase Eloha. Poslo would mean once it's carved. Once it's made, it becomes a god. V'idoch, Rabbi Shmuel, Hahu miboyale lichditoni Rav Yosef. He needs this pasuk of Psila Elohim for Rav Yosef's teaching. Titoni Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef presents a Tanaic source, and you can see it's in a frame. Minayin loivit kichavim sheposel loho. Here the word posel means to void, like the word puzzle, ruined, no good. So he's from here. From where do you know that a Gentile is capable of voiding his God? The use of the word, Hebrew word with the root pei samach lamed posal, we saw according to Rabbi Akiva, was used in the verb form of sculpting or etching, carving. Here, Rabbi Shmuel uses the same root of pei samach lamed to refer to voiding, a different verb form, or a different action. Rabbi Akiva spoke about sculpting. Rabbi Yishmuel refers to voiding. So from where do we know that the Oved Kechavim is able to void his God, his idol? Shenemar, psile Elohehem tisrefun bo'esh. That they can passel, that they can void it. V'idach, Rabbi Akiva, nafkalei midi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva learns it out from the same source that Shmuel, many generations later, established. because the Shmuel Rami, Shmuel raises a seeming contradiction. Lo sachmod kesef izov alehem. The pasuk says, "You shall not covet or desire the gold and silver that's on the gods." Uksiv ulakach daloch. Take it for yourself. Well, haketzad. How do you resolve this? On the one hand, the pasuk is telling you, "Do not covet it." In other words, you can't take it. On the other hand, the pasuk is saying, is giving you an allowance. So haketzad. How do you resolve that? Posloi le'eloha lo sachmod. It means if he sculpts an idol, he sculpts something into a god form, that's le'eloha. Notice we've emphasized with a double underline the lamed there, you'll notice the y. He says, then we say lo sachmod. However, paslo me'eloha, if he voids it from being a god, notice the mem, a different prefix. From the mem means from being a god, that it means if the Gentile voids it, then you're entitled to take it. For Bikiva, Ashkechon avodis kechovim shel oivid kechovim da'asura miyad. So far, we saw Rabbi Kiva and the source for his indicating that a Gentile-owned idol is asur immediately. The Yisrael achetev ad min olan. What about Rabbi Kiva's position with regard to a Jewish-owned idol, whereby he says it's asur only once it's worshipped? Where does he know that from? Once again, the references that we've been making to Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel regarding Jewish and Gentile-owned idols, these opinions were stated at the bottom of Nun Aleph Amud Beis in the Tanaic source. Here, on this summit, what we're simply doing is seeking the Makoros, the sources, for their respective opinions. So where do we know, where does Rabbi Kiva derive that a Jewish-owned idol is not also immediate, but only once it's served? Minolan, Omar, Rav Yehuda, Omar Kro, Vesom, Veseser. That is in Perek Chof Zayin of Sefer Bamidbor, Posuk Tezvov. Dvorim, once again, Dvorim, Chof Zayin, Posuk Tezvov. The pasuk is describing idolatry, and it says there, "V'som b'seser" equals "ad shi'ase lo dvorim shebeseser," until he does things to it that one would do in private, namely service, serve it. One would worship it in private, and once he worships it in private, then it becomes forbidden. And this pasuk is addressing Jews. V'idoch Rabbi Shmuel, ha'hum b'boilei v'Rabbi Yitzchak. He uses this pasuk v'seisef for Rabbi Yitzchak's teaching. The Yomer Rabbi Yitzchak, minayim avodis kachom sheYisrael shetuuna geniza. From where do we know that a Jewish-owned idol needs to be buried? Shenema v'som v'seisef. Put it away in hiding. We might just make a reference here using the stars that we have included in the. To the immediate right-hand side of Gemara text. If you scan up, you'll see the Gemara made a reference already earlier when it was discussing the Shita of Rabbi Shmuel, and we saw it said in the Gemara up above, Hashto Geniza Baya. Here, we're seeing the source for that, namely from this pasuk of Vesom B'Seser. Continuing in the back-and-forth discussion, Ve'idach, Rabbi Akiva, Nafkole, he learns out Geniza, the requirement of burying the idol. Midi Rav Chisda Marav, from Rav Chisda Marav's teaching, the Amar Rav Chisda Marav, Minayin Lavudis Kechavim Sheyisrael Shetuuna Geniza. From where do we know that the Jewish-owned idol requires burial? In other words, it's forbidden and has to be buried. Shenemar Lo Sita Lecho Ashiro Kol Eitz Eitzel Mizbach. Ma mizbeach toun geniza, just like if something goes wrong with the stones of the mizbeach, the stones are forbidden to benefit from, and hence they, if something goes wrong, they have to be buried. Af ashira touna geniza, so to ashira, which is referenced in the same pasuk in the context of mizbeach, it too, the ashira being a representation of idols, it too needs to be buried. V'idoch Rabbi Yishmael, who has his pasuk for burial was v'som b'seser, what does he learn from this lo sita lo ashera? He says, "Ahu mi'boyalei l'chidrei shlokish." he uses this pasuk of Lelsita Lecha Ashera for Reish Lakish's teaching. The Amar Reish Lakish, Kol Amame Dayan Sheino Hogun, any community that establishes a judge that is not fit, Keilu Notea Ashera Bisrael. It's as if he's planting an idolatrous tree in Israel. Shenemar Shoiftim V'Shoitrim Titen Lecha B'chol Sherecha V'Samach Lei. You have the first pasuk. This pasuk indicates the establishing of judges that shall be set up in all communities. And next to that pasuk, you have a samach lei lo sita lecha asherah kol eitz. So that you see that the asherah can figure in a comparison to the issue of setting up judges, and that of course is if the judge that is set up is not fit. Omar Avashi uvemokom tamidi chachomim. If someone sets up a judge who is unfit in a community where there are scholars, ki'ilu notoi etzel mizbeach, it's as if he set up an idolatrous tree, not in isolation, but even worse, set it up next to the altar of the Beis Hamikdash. Shenamar etzel mizbeach. The in this analogy, of course, Talmidei Chachamim are compared to the altar. As you can see in the markings, we have a slash indicating that that which follows is a new idea. We have a number of markings that will appear as the sugya unfolds. In the outside margin, we have a mivneh heading, a structural note. So we see a bow tie form. That's a reference to sidra shel she'elos, a series of questions. So we see the series begins here. And on Omid Beis, we will see again a question. So in total we have three questions. One immediately, four lines from the bottom, you see another one, and on Amud Beis. The Nosei Mivneh, the next title heading, we see a house form, which we will see immediately now as we read on in the Gemara. The house form here is Shlavim. There are two house forms that we'll see in the Gemara. They are stages, Shelbiur, of clarification, kidei lehovin mahu sheilas Rav Hamnuna, to understand what is Rav Hamnuna's question beinyan kelim lavodazar. Rav Hamnuna raises a question regarding vessels in the context of serving an idol. We'll call them service vessels to an idol. So he raises a question, and the Gemara will spend a lot of time clarifying what his question is. The stage one, tikun kli lavodazar, where there had been a vessel that was in disrepair, and someone came along and repaired the vessel for the purpose of serving an idol. The second stage, we'll talk about Tuma Yishana, Bekeshel Avodizora. Tuma Yishana is a situation where a vessel had been Tame, and it's actually a general topic, not limited to idolatry. What the Gemara is going to do is going to take the general topic of Tuma Yishana and apply it to idolatry. But in general, the topic of Tuma Yishana concerns a vessel that had been ritually impure. Generally speaking, the process of purification involves immersing that vessel in a mikveh and waiting till sunset, and then using it the next day, and or is after nightfall. There's another way of metahir, of cleansing or purifying a vessel on a Torah level, on a Doraisa level, and that would be to, for example, punch a hole in it, render it unfit. If one renders it unfit, the tuma would dissipate, would disperse, and the vessel, that which remains, in other words, the broken vessel, is considered tahor, it's considered pure. And therefore, if one were to repair it afterwards, it would then be tahor, because it after the repair, it didn't necessarily come into contact with anything tamei. So you, by rendering it unfit, one cleansed it, so to speak, from its tuma. And what we just described is true on a Torah level. However, the Rabbanan come along and said, if people see that taking place, in other words, if they see vessels that they knew were tamei, and just a couple minutes after it's repaired, it's put into use, people aren't going to realize that it achieved tahara through the fact that it was in disrepair. They're going to think that it was immersed in a mikveh and used immediately. That would be wrong, because tahara achieved through mikveh immersion is effective only after sunset, namely the mikveh immersion before sunset and the then subsequent use after sunset, meaning like the next day. Technically speaking, when the after sunset, there sets in the new day. People are going to think, though, if you were to rely on the repair method, in other words, break and repair, that people not realizing that it went through the break and repair stages, but rather they'll think mistakenly that it was immersed, and that immersion is effective for immediate cleansing. As a result of that, the Rabbanan instituted a rule that says that if you render a vessel, you break it, render it unfit for use, and then repair it, so that same day, the old tumah that was there comes back. So that if the vessel was tomei tumas sheretz, in other words, it had, when it was complete, it had come into contact with a dead creature, a sheretz creature, and then you punched a hole in the vessel and then repaired it all within a short time, that vessel will become unfit, it'll become tomei sheretz again, even though when it had a hole in it, it was technically speaking not tomei. When you repair it, the old tumah midrabbonan will come back. That's called tumah yishana. Yishana means old. The old tumah comes back. We will then raise the question in the context of tumas avodah zarah, but that will be the next stage of the Gemara. Turning to the Gemara, boy Rav Hamnuna. Risech kli lavoides kechovim mahu. Rashi explains risech kli in the upper part of the page. Kli shenishbar, a kli that had been broken. Vehikish alav bekornis, and that he pounded on it with a hammer. Ad shiriko, until he flattened it out. Vinispashe, and it the flattened metal then expanded. Vinismali pigimoso, and the hole that had been there, or the notch then got filled up with the flattened out metal. In other words, for our purposes, this is a process of repairing a vessel. That's risech kli le avodes kechovim mahu. He repaired it for an idol. Notice we have a brackets. The star draws your attention to a note on the side of the Gemara. B'sograyim ha-gemor mivareres ha-reka la-she'ela. Within the bracketed section of Gemara, there will be a discussion or a clarification of the basis of the question. After the bracketed section, the Gemara comes to a climax, in focusing on what the question really is. So, for our purposes, that now that we've given that little introduction, we'll go through the bracketed section, realizing that we're not going to be really be focusing on the question until we finish the bracketed section. So, Rav Hamnuna makes reference to a repairing of a vessel for an idol, mahu. So the Gemara asks, avodes kechovim deman, whose idol are we talking about? And here we're going to have the double underline with dots in it, and this is also featured on the outside margin under the Mivneh heading, Ilemo and Ella. You see these words, Ilemo and Ella, are featured with this marking. These are Shlovim Bebiur Avodah Zarah Shel Mi, stages in clarifying whose idol are we talking about. So the first stage, Ilemo, Avodas Kechavim De'Oved Kechavim, if you think that we're talking about the idol of a Gentile, well, Bain the Rabbi Shmuel, Bain the Rabbi Kiva, whether you're talking in terms of Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Kiva, Mishamshe Avodes Kechovim Hain, we're talking about service vessels of idols belonging to Gentiles, Umishamshe Avodes Kechovim Ein Asurin Ad Shiavdu, they are not forbidden until they're used in service of the idol. So, the question that Rav Hamnuna is asking wouldn't need to be raised if you're dealing with service vessels of Gentile-owned idols. V'ela, it must be that we're talking about Avodas Kechovim d'Yisrael. We're talking about the repairing of a service vessel that will be used in service of a Jewish-owned idol. So once again, Aliba Deman, according to whom are you raising the question? If you think that the question is being raised according to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, there would be no need to raise the question. The idol itself, which is a more severe issue, it itself is not forbidden until it's actually worshipped. Misham sheha mibaya, is there any need to raise a question about the vessels used in the service of such idols, of Jewish-owned idols? There's no need to raise a question. In other words, there's no possibility that it would become forbidden any earlier than that. The Elah, and now we're focusing on the real question. Aliba der Bishmoel. We're talking about the service vessels of idols owned by Jews according to Rabbi Shmuel. The Omar Asura Miyad. Rabbi Shmuel's opinion with regard to Jewish-owned idols is that they are forbidden immediately upon construction. My, what is the halacha with regard to the vessels? So there are two possibilities. Now that we've focused on the question, and you can see we've listed them off with an aleph, and you see the next line, there's a squiggle in line, O Dilma, and following that, Beis. Aleph, O Dilma, or maybe Beis, two sides of the question. Mishamshin, mi Mishamshin, Gamrinan, maybe we learn service vessels of Jewish-owned idols from service vessels of Gentile-owned idols. Gamrinan, we learn, Ma Hosam, just like by the Gentile Ad Shiavdu, they are not forbidden until they are actually served. Af Hocha, so too with regard to the vessels of the Jewish-owned idol, Achiavdu, they won't be forbidden until they're actually used in service. By the way, we have a double star here to draw your attention to where this information was seen earlier. Just a few lines up, you see the expression said at the beginning of the line, Ein Asurin Achiavdu. That was a reference to the point of agreement between Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Kiva regarding the service vessels of Gentile-owned idols. And that's because here we are saying that we'll learn the Jewish-owned ones from the Gentile-owned ones, and there it was mentioned that the Gentile-owned service vessels are forbidden only once they're used in service. So too, Af Hocha, in our Gemara, where the case of the Jewish-owned service vessels, would be forbidden only Ashiavdu once they're put into use. Oy Dilma, mi no gomar. Or maybe we'll learn the halacha, the law concerning the vessels from it itself, namely from the idol itself. The idol itself, we're talking about a Jewish-owned idol. Ma hi asura miad, just like a Jewish-owned idol is usher immediately. Af mishamshel, so too, it could be that the service vessels of a Jewish-owned idol, asur and miad, are usher immediately. So this is the question. This is the basic question then of Rav Hamnuna. The Gemara now asks, on this, my iria dekamibayale resef kli. What is motivating Rav Hamnuna to speak in his question, to raise as part of his question the resef kli, which means repairing a broken vessel, tiboyale? Also, why doesn't he ask straight out about an initial making of a vessel? In other words, Rav Hamnuna could have asked, at what point does the vessel, which is at first constructed, made for a Jewish-owned idol, at what point does it become usher? Why does he raise the question in the context of repairing a vessel? So the Gemara comes up to stage two. Rav Hamnuna mishum tumi yeshona kamibayale. Rav Hamnuna was preoccupied with another topic, namely the issue of tumi yeshona. Tumi yeshona is a question that one would raise only if you're dealing with a vessel that is being repaired. As we mentioned in our introduction to this section, a vessel that had been tumei already, had been ritually impure, and it developed a hole, it became broken, and let's say it became useless, and then he repaired it for an idol. He repaired it, but hasn't used it yet in service of the idol. As we mentioned in our introduction, vessels that have been tumei in general, regardless of Avodah Zarah, Tumas Sheretz, Tumas Neveva, other kinds of tumos that settle upon vessels, if they are broken and then repaired, we say that the old tuma comes back, so that people don't get the idea that tevila bas yuma is moil, that a same day immersion purification would be effective. So as to dispel that idea, the Rabbanan instituted that if you repair a broken vessel that had been tume, the old tuma that will come back, even though while it was in a state of disrepair, the tuma had left it. Mida Rabbanan, from a rabbinic vantage point, it will come back. The Gemara now goes on to give the background to the question, and then works in the issue of Avodah Zorah to the question. So as we go on in the Gemara, it will introduce to us ideas that we mentioned verbally. Disnan, kli matris, metal vessels, pshutein, mekablein, temein, whether they be flat vessels or vessels designed for holding substances, namely they have a base kibble, they're not flat, they can hold things, they are capable of being mekabel tuma. And if you have them, either all kinds of kli matris, metal vessels that have been tome, nishtabru taru, if they are broken, they lose their tuma. Chozar v'ason kelim, if he then repaired them, yachsru l'tuma yishana, the old tuma comes back, and they would then still need tevila, they'll need to be immersed. As we said before, that's to dispel anyone thinking that immersion alone on the same day could help. So that Tanaic source features Tuma Yeshana in general. The Hachi Kamebaya Lei, and here in the Rabbi Rav Hamnuna is asking, Ki Hadra Tuma, when we talk about at the point of repair, the old Tuma comes back. Hani Mili Lituma Doraisa, that's when you're talking about the realm of impurity on a Torah level, like Tumas Sheretz or Tumas Nevela. Avultuma Darabonan Lo. The topic Rav Hamnuna is addressing is the following. You have a vessel that was used for the service of an idol. At that point, at the point that it became Tomei, it became Tomei Tuma Darabonan, impurity associated with idolatry is a Tuma Darabonan, it's a rabbinic imposed Tuma. Now, that vessel that had Tumas Avodah Zorah broke, and it was broken, let us say, in order to mitire it, and then he repaired it. This was the expression that Rav Hamnuna used initially, resef kli avodes kechavim. He then repaired a vessel that had been used in idolatry, subsequently broken, and then repaired it for the purpose of service of an idol, but has not yet served the idol with it in its repaired form. The question is, through the repairing of it, does it absorb, or does the old tuma, the tumas of Avodah Zorah, get reinstated? So on the side that the concept of tuma yeshana was instituted only with regard to Torah level tumas, it wouldn't get reinstated here. That's the last phrase we read in the Gemara, Avol tuma derabanan lo. Since idolatrous related tuma is rabbinic in nature, it would not get reinstated. Or it could be that we make no distinctions. That just like in the case of, in the general topic of Tuma Yeshana, which applies to Torah level Tumas, when you break it and then repair it, the old Tuma comes back. The same thing will apply with rabbinic level Tumas. For example, Tumas of Avodah Zorah. The Gemara asks, the Tiboy Le Shar Tumas de Rabbanan, why doesn't Rav Hamnuna raise the question with regard to all other forms of impurity that is of a rabbinic nature? There are other forms of Tuma that we call Tuma de Rabbanan. Rashi gives examples of that. Why is he focusing the question on this Tuma de Rabbanan, namely Tumas Avodah Zorah? The Gemara answers, Chada migo chado komibayale. There's one question within another question he is actually raising. And it is as follows. Now, the Gemara clarifies what Rav Hamnuna's original question was. It's interesting to note, of course, look how many lines of Gemara are spent in just trying to understand the question. As far as the answer, we'll have to wait and see what the answer, if there is any answer whatsoever. But it's extremely important in learning Torah, and especially in learning Gemara, to have clarity on understanding what the question is. And here you have a classic example of that. So we're now saying that Rav Hamnuna's question is a double-fold question. And the Gemara explains. Number one, Tuma Darabonan, Mi Hodra O Lo Hodra. When discussing this realm of Tuma Yeshana, the breaking of a vessel with the hope of purifying it and then repairing it, and we speak about the Tuma coming back, does this apply when dealing with a situation where the initial Tuma was of a rabbinic nature? So does Mi Hodra, does it come back? O Lo Hodra, maybe it doesn't come back. In Tinsiloma Lo Hodra, and even if you take the stance that Tuma Durabonan does not come back, Tuma de Avidas Kechavim, Tuma associated with idolatry, true, it is also de Rabbanan. However, Mishum Chumra de Avidas Kechavim, Mi Shavua Rabbanan Ketuma de Raisa Oiloi. Because of the Chumra, because of the stringency of this topic, the topic of idolatry, Mi Shavua Rabbanan, do the Rabbanan make it, deem it Ketuma de Raisa, treat it with the same intensity as we would have Tuma de Raisa, Torah level Tuma. Oh no, or maybe we don't treat it with the same standard, and basically because it's Tuma Durabonin, it would not come back. Teku, this remains unresolved. As we go on in the Gemara, a new bow tie form indicating a new question. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading, Haim Moyul Bitol, Litair Takruvis of Edizora, Shel Oichlin Mitumaso. We have already learned in previous sugyas the concept of bitul avodah zarah, the voiding of an idol itself, and we've said in the past that a Gentile is given license to void idols, and if he does, the idol becomes allowed, becomes mutter. The question here is going to focus on the voiding of an offering. The takruvas of avodah zarah is a sacrifice to an idol. Now, let us point out, before we explain the question, sacrifices to idols are forbidden. In addition to their being forbidden, they also carry with them tumah, a rabbinic-imposed level of ritual impurity. When one comes along to mevatel the takruvas of avodah zarah, the food offering made to an idol, we are not going to discuss the issue of permissibility of this particular takruvas, because we've already proven in the past that takruvas, ironically, the takruvas, the offering to an idol, is more severe than the idol itself, in the sense that an idol itself does lend itself to being voided, whereas the takruvas, and after it's voided, the idol becomes permissible. You can sell it, you can benefit from it. Whereas the offering made to an idol, the permissibility is not an issue. In other words, it does not become permissible. The only question that's left to ask, what about the impurity aspect of it? Does the voiding of the offering to the Avodah Zarah, in this case the voiding of a food offering, does it become tahor? We're not talking about permissible. It won't become permissible. But maybe it loses its power of conveying ritual impurity. Let's now turn back to the Gemara. Boi, minei, Rav Yochanan, Rav Yanai. Rav Yochanan asks his Rebbe, Rav Yanai, takruvas avodah zarah shel oichlin mahu, an offering to an idol of food. The offering is food, and he offers the food to an idol. Mahu. Mi mahanya lehu bito litarinu mitum'o oiloi. Mahanya means benefit or effective. Is the bitol, is the voiding of it, effective in establishing ritual purity? In other words, removing the tumah from it or not? At this point, we encounter a bracketed section of Gemara, and these brackets extend till the third line from the top of Amud Beis, and we have a length indicator, a bracket length indicator, a special marking. When you encounter brackets and want to find where they close, you'll notice to the side of the Gemara text a dash dotted line. If you follow that line till the end, you'll find the line on which the brackets ends. We had a marking like this a few lines up as well. In the bracketed section, we could take note of the note that accompanies this bracketed section. And in the inside margin of the Gemara, you'll notice a star with a note there. It says Achrei Sugraim, after the brackets. Hagemara Mamshicha Lefarei Sheilas Rabbi Yochanan. The Gemara will continue in explaining Rabbi Yochanan's question. Besocha Sugraim, and within the bracketed section, we will be featuring a triangle with a colored in tip. Hagemara Sheilas Lomar Rabbi Yochanan Shal Hochi. Why did Rabbi Yochanan ask the way he did? And we will present alternatives to what he could have asked. So we have on the outside margin, also under our Mivneh heading, we feature the triangle with the colored in tip. Two alternative suggestions of what he, Rabbi Yochanan, could have asked. So that's the top, that's what preoccupies the Gemara in the brackets. However, as far as Rabbi Yochanan's question, the real question that he asked, that itself will be clarified further after the brackets. So if we were to skip the bracketed section momentarily, the last thing we read in the Gemara was, Mi mahanyu lebitu latarinu mitumo lo, does the voiding of the takrubas of Eizkechovim of Oichlim, is it effective in removing the tuma, skipping the brackets? You'll notice Aleph O Dilma Beis appearing. Third line from the top, you see an Aleph. And the line after that, the end, there's a squiggle under expression O Dilma, or maybe, and then Beis. Kavon, the Gemara there says, third line from the top, Kavon de Isure Lo Botil Kirav Gidol. Since the prohibition is not voided when you're dealing with offerings to idols, based on Rav Gidol's teaching that concluded that offerings are forbidden forever, Tumanami Lo Botela. So the issue of Tuma will follow the same path as the issue of Isser. You know, the issue of purity will follow the issue of permissibility. Just like there's no permissibility ever for offerings made to idols, so too Tuma will never become removed. Oy Dilma, Isur is equals Doraisa, Lo Batil. The issue of permissibility, that's a Torah-level issue. And the Isser that sets upon offerings to Avodah Zarah, that is an Isser, that's a prohibition on a Torah level. So something of a Torah level cannot be voided. Tuma equals the Rabbanan, Botil. Tuma, the issue of ritual impurity as far as idol worship is concerned, is a rabbinic concept that does lend itself to being voided because it's of a lesser level of severity. So Teku, this too remains unresolved. Turning back to the Gemara now, to the bracketed section, Rabbi Yochanan had raised a question concerning the Takrubas of Yisrochavim of Oichlin. The Gemara asks in the brackets, V'tiboyele Kalim, why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan ask about vessels used for service of an Avodah Zorah? Does the voiding of such vessels result in the purification of the vessels? So the Gemara says, Kalim lo komibayale. The issue of vessels is not an issue with Rabbi Yochanan, isn't a question to him. Kevon de islehu tara b'mikvah, since vessels have a possibility of achieving purification through immersion in a mikvah, tuma nami b'tela. The possibility of the tuma being voided is clear that it is botel, that tuma will be botel, will be voided or removed. Ki komi b'yale oichlin. The issue that is of a question to Rabbi Yochanan concerns food. Food is something that when it becomes tome, immersion in a mikvah does not grant it tahara, purification status. V'tiboyele V'tiboyalei avodis kechavim gufa. Why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan ask about a piece of food item that was itself used as an idol? For example, someone bowed down to a loaf of bread. And Rabbi Yochanan could have asked, does the voiding of the idol result in the voiding of its tumah? So the Gemara says, well, you know why Rabbi Yochanan didn't ask about that? The issue of the idol itself, food that was food that became an idol, that was treated as an idol, is not a question. Kevon de isura botil, since we know that the prohibition of the food is removed. The Isser is batel, because we're talking about the voiding of an idol. And we know that idols can be voided and become permissible. Tuma nami betela. So the tuma, the impurity that it had as a result of its idolatrous status, also is capable of being voided. The chiddush here is, it's interesting, and the chiddush is that even though it's food, and food per se doesn't lend itself to purification through a mikveh, but here we're talking about the food having been treated as an idol itself. So, as a result of that, and the idol itself becomes permissible, it goes without saying that the ritual impurity will also depart. The question that does preoccupy Rabbi Yochanan is an offering to an idol that is of food nature. The question is as follows: Mai, kevon de isure lo botil, since the prohibition cannot become voided based on Rav Gittel's teaching, tuma nami lo betela, the impurity also does not depart. Oy dilma. Or it could be Isur equals Doraisa, Lobatil. The issue of the Takruvis being prohibited, that's a Torah prohibition. That doesn't lend itself to being voided. That's what Rav Gittel teaches. However, Tuma, the Rabbonon, Batil, Tuma, the Tuma associated with idolatry is of a rabbinic nature. And that does lend itself to being voided. Teku. This remains unresolved. Another question, you can see as indicated by a new bow tie. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading. Kalim shishimshu beveis chonyo. Vessels that were used in service in the temple of chonyo. Aliba de mande omar de lav avoydezora hoyav. According to the opinion that beis chonyo was not of an idolatrous nature, but it was rather a place outside of Yerushalayim, that was designed as a temple in service of God, even though that itself is forbidden, but it was not idolatrous. So according to the opinion that Beis Chonyo was not an idolatrous institution, and so we're going to ask about the vessels that were used in that temple, can they be used subsequently in the temple of Yerushalayim, the holy Beis HaMikdash? We also have a long question marking that accompanies this piece of Gemara. You can see the shin that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. All of the lines opposite this vertical dashed line are part of the question. The question comes to a head at the Aleph O Vilma Bay section that you find toward the end of the long question marking. You see there is an Aleph in the middle of the line in parentheses, and the line following that at the end you see O Vilma squiggle underlined Bays. So up to that point we have lead up information into the question. Bo mine Rav Yossi ben Shol me Rebbe. Rav Yossi asks of Rebbe a question. Kalim shishimshu bohen bebeis chonyo, mahu shishtamshu bohen bebeis hamikdash. The question, we're focusing on the vessels. Hence, we've emphasized the word kalim. This is in contrast to, we'll say now, it's in contrast to kohanim that served in the beis chonyo. We're focusing right now on the vessels used in the Beis Chonyo temple. Can they be used afterwards in the Beis HaMikdash? That's Ma'al Shishtamshu Behen the Beis HaMikdash. There's a bracketed section that is not entirely designed for skipping, as we often do with bracketed sections, because the information in the brackets serves as a background for understanding the real question. It's almost impossible to skip the brackets and expect to understand the Gemara. But we will make an attempt to do something, let's say orally, by pointing out that in the brackets, the Gemara will discuss the issue of Kohanim. The Kohanim themselves, a person that served, or who is a Kohen, and he happened to serve in the Beis Chanyo, that type of person, we say, he cannot, later on, after he served the Beis Chanyo, he's rendered unfit for serving in the Beis HaMikdash. So that point is clear. The question arises concerning the vessels. The vessels are less severe, in a certain sense, than the Kohanim themselves. So if you do skip the bracketed section, notice, our actual question is Aleph Kehanim Hu the Kansinu Rabbanan Mishum de Bnei Deyaninu Avokelim. Though it could be that the Kehanim, which is proven or shown in the bracketed section, they are prohibited. There is a fine against them, a knas raised against them, that or a restriction imposed upon them that they are not allowed to serve because they are B'nai Deo. They made a decision. They're capable of making a decision. They decided to serve in the Beis Chanyo. That creates that because of that, we restrict them. We impose a knas upon them, a restriction in so far as they cannot any longer serve in the Beis HaMikdash. But Kalim, Avol Kalim Lo, Kalim are not, they're inanimate, they don't have their own minds. So we don't impose that restriction. The Kalim never made a decision. Oidilmo Lo Shno, or maybe we don't treat the vessel any differently, and just like the Kehanim are restricted, the vessels also will be restricted from use subsequently in the Beis HaMikdash. Let's now go over the entire Gemara with the bracketed section. So Rav Yossi is asking of Rebbe, Kalim, where the, notice we're going back to where the Kalim word is squiggle underlined, Kalim Shishim Shubhan Beis Chanyo, Kalim that were used in the Beis Chanyo temple, Ma'u Shishtam Shubhan Beis HaMikdash, can they be used subsequently in the Beis HaMikdash? The Kamiboya lay Alibadamadomar Beis Chanyo Lav Beis Avisuchovim He. The question is being raised according to the opinion that the Beis Chanyo, we've dashed underlined Lav to emphasize that it was not an idolatrous temple. The Snan, the source features the Beis Chanyo, and it says Kehanim Shishim Shuba Beis Chanyo Lo Yisham Shuba Mikdash Yerushalayim. Kohanim that served in this Beis Chanyo temple cannot afterwards serve in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. V'eino tzorach lomar ledovar acher. And it goes without saying that Kohanim that served an idol, an actual idol, they certainly cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash. From this source you see that the Beis Chanyo is not a place of idolatry. It was simply a temple that was set up in to serve God, the Almighty, But outside of Yerushalayim, and that was its problem. Even so, even though it wasn't idolatrous, Kohanim that served there lose their license to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. So we know the halacha regarding Beis Chanyo in the context of Kohanim themselves. The question then is as follows. Aleph, Kohanim hu dekansinu rabbanon. It could be that it's the priests, the Kohanim themselves, the people who are Kohanim, that were restricted mishum de b'nei deyoninu, because they are capable of making decisions and they decided to, erroneously decided to serve in the Beis Chanyo. And therefore, we restrict them from serving in the Beis HaMikdash. Avo Kalim lo. Kalim are not b'nei deyo. They are not capable of making decisions. They're inanimate objects. So this restriction does not apply to them. And if they were used in the Beis Chanyo, they would be allowed to be used subsequently in the Beis HaMikdash, or possibly we make no distinction, and just like the Kohanim who served the Beis Chanyo cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash, so two vessels that were used in the service of Beis Chanyo likewise cannot be used later on in the Beis HaMikdash. Amarle, Rebbe answers, Asurin Hain. Those vessels are forbidden. Umikra hoya biyodenu vishachnuhu. And I had a pasuk, I had a source for this, but I forgot it. Esve. The Gemara now raises a question on Rebbe. Rebbe's psak was that they are forbidden. But we have a question. The question itself lasts about four lines. And it says, Kol hakelim asher hizniach hamelech ochoz b'machuso b'ma'alo heichanu v'hikdashnu. This pasuk talks about vessels that were used by King Ochoz. He used the Beis HaMikdash vessels for the service of idols. And the current understanding of the pasuk is as follows. Mein lav, hechanu, is the agbalinu. We immerse them to remove the tumas avodah zara that they had. Higdashnu is the akdashinu, that we then re-sanctify them. In other words, that they were not usur. They, Rashi points out that the Rashi, you'll notice in the Rashi itself, a little star, a little about halfway down, you see Vigdashnu Dakdashinu Shechozru Umoshnu Bishemana Mishcha. They were, after they were immersed in the mikveh to remove the tumas of Avodah Zarah, they were then anointed with the special anointing oil for sanctification of vessels in the Beis HaMikdash. Almo Kivin de Meraisa Lo Mitzri Daha Hekdishninu. Since these vessels were not Ochas misused them for idolatrous purposes, but from a Torah level, they did not become forbidden, because Ein Odom Oiser Dover Sheino Shelo. A person cannot make forbidden that which is not his. In this case, Ochaz, even though he was a king, the vessels did not belong to him. He could not make those vessels usher. So we see something that is doesn't become forbidden on a Torah level. They can be resuscitated, so to speak, reused. Inhu lo gozru alayo, the Rabbanan did not impose any restrictions on them. Hoyo v'lav b'nei de'aninu, since the vessels are not, they are not capable of thought. So at this point in the Gemara, we have a question on Rebbe. Rebbe wanted to say that the vessels, even though they were lav b'nei de'a, they were incapable of thought, they do become restricted. Here, as a result of this question, we see that vessels do not become restricted. Omarle, Rebbe, who was strict, he says, Oh, Baruch atol ha-shamayim, she'echzarto li avidosi. Blessed be you unto heaven, for you have returned to me that which was forgotten or lost from me. In other words, you cited a pasuk in asking on me. It's in fact that very same pasuk that is my source for prohibition. As follows. Heichanu equals shegonzu, meaning even though the vessels are mutter midoraisa, are allowed from a Torah perspective, the chachomim imposed a knas, a restriction. And that's what the word heichanu means. Heichanu means, in, as far as Rebbe is concerned, they put them away. The hikdashnu means shikdashnu achirim tachtehem, that we sanctified new ones instead. Now, the Gemara turns around and says, Leimo Messiah, let us offer the following as a support to Rebbe. So, this is a Leimo. Leimo is a question. We've dashed, underlined the Leimo so you can focus on this as the beginning of this particular question. You'll notice it's also a four-line question, as indicated by the long question marking to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara. Leimo Messiah, can we offer the following as a support to Rebbe? Let's not forget, Rebbe was speaking about vessels used in service in the Beis Chonyo. We have a source that deals with the Beis HaMikdash. It says, Mizrachis Tzvoinis, the north eastern corner of one of the Beis HaMikdash offices. These are called Lishkois. There were different lishkos in the azora of the Beis HaMikdash. So the northeastern corner was Bo Gonzu Beis Hashmonoi es Avnei Hamizbeach Sheshoksu Anshe Yavon. The Omar Rav Sheshes Sheshoksu Avisuchavim. There was the northeastern lishka was the site in which the Beis Hashmoni buried or hid or buried the stones of the Mizbeach that were misused by the Greeks when they came in, as many of you are familiar with the Hanukkah story. So prior to the miracle of the Hasmonean, the Hashmoi defeat of the Anshe Yavon of the Greek army, the Greeks had desecrated the Beis HaMikdash, including the temple, including the altar. They had used the altar for idolatrous purposes. What was the eventual end of those stones? So they were put away. They were put out of service by the Beis Hashmonai. And Rav Sheshes points out that the Shoksu Anshe Yavon is a reference to their having used it for idolatrous purposes. We see from here that even though the stones used by the Greeks for idolatrous purposes, in truth, don't become forbidden, because for a commoner, they wouldn't become forbidden because of the rule we mentioned before, Ein Odom Oyser Domer Shein Shalo. A person cannot render unfit something that is not his. And nevertheless, the Rabbonin imposed a restriction when it comes to issues concerning temple use, Beis HaMikdash use. And we see that these stones, even though they are not b'nei de'ah, they're inanimate, they're not capable of thought, they were nevertheless rendered unfit by the Beis Hashmonai. In other words, Beis Hashmonai ruled they're unfit. They were rendered unfit, of course, by the Greek misuse of them. Beis Hashmonai Paskin ruled there to be put away. So too with the Beis Chonyo, even though it wasn't a place of idolatry, and even though min haTorah they don't become forbidden, of course what we're doing is we're paralleling this to the fact that the stones of the Mizbeach min haTorah do not become forbidden for common use. Nevertheless, since we're talking about a topic of Beis HaMikdash, continued use in the Beis HaMikdash, the Rabbanan will impose a fine. So this lamo Messiah to Rebbe, let us suggest this is a support to Rebbe. We're trying to bring a support to Rebbe who spoke about vessels used in the Beis Chonyo from the topic of Mizbeach stones in the context of the Greeks and the Beis Hashmonai. At this point, the Gemara rejects the support. Omar Rav Popa, Hosam Kro Ashkach V'Dorash. In the case of the stones of the Beis HaMikdash that were used by the Greeks, there is a pasuk that indicates that they are forbidden even for a commoner. In other words, their misuse rendered them unfit even for common use, and hence it will not be parallel to the case of the Beis Chonyo. In the case of the Beis Chonyo, we said as a principle, Ein Odom Oyser Dover She'enu Shelo, that they continue to be permissible from a Torah level. Here, the case that was cited as a possible support for Rebbe is not a support because we're featuring something that became forbidden on a Torah level. And the Gemara explains, Dichtiv, Uvo ba pritzim v'chaleluha, and the evil ones came in and rendered it chulin, rendered them common. In other words, something that was holy was then rendered chulin. Rashi explains this on the end of the narrow lines, Dichtiv Ubo Bo Pritzim Chalua. Rashi says, first wide line under the Gemara, Mikivan Shinichnasu Evik Rechovim Lehechal, at the point that the idols, the idolatrous ones, the Gentiles, entered the temple in conquest, Yotsu Kelov Lechulin. As a result of their conquest, the Gentile conquest, the vessels became rendered common. In other words, they lost their Kedusha, became a Nafki Lechulin, Kaninu Behefkera, and once they became chulin, chulin is the antithesis of hetish, they, as a result of their being chulin, the goyim are said to have acquired it from the state of hefker, from the state of their being unowned. In other words, previously, while hektish, they were owned by the Beis HaMikdash, but the pasuk indicates that upon Gentile military conquest, they lose their hektish, their holy status. At that point, then, who owns them? They're unowned, they're hefker. And at that point, the Gentiles who take over acquire them. V'havaluhu did who? And as a result of their acquiring it, it becomes theirs. And then when they use it in service of the idols, nesru, they render it unfit, or prohibited. In other words, it's not a case of ein odom oser dover she'eino shelo, that a person cannot render unfit something that's not his, because in this case the stones are theirs. They acquired the stones. The pasuk, that's what we mean here at Doraisa. The Torah, in this case it's a pasuk in Yecheskel, gives them license, so to speak, to acquire it. It's through military conquest they acquired it, and then when they use it as in the service of their idols, it becomes rendered unfit by letter of the law. Continuing in the Gemara now delves into the issue confronting the Beis Hashmonai. Amri Hechinavid. The Beis Hashmonai said when they defeated the Greeks and then noticed all of they repossessed the Beis Hamikdash, including the altar with its stones. They said, "What are we going to do?" Nisbarinu. What we've done here with our markings is we've featured with a double underline the possibilities that are rejected, that we're confronting, confronted the Beis Hashmonai. So the first possibility is maybe Nisbarinu, let us have a Gentile come and break the stones to mevatel them. By the breaking of it through a Gentile, they would be voided from their idolatrous use that the Greeks imposed upon it, and then we can use them for rebuilding the temple altar. Well, that's not a possibility. Avonim shlemos amarachmona, complete stones, meaning stones that have no notches in them, so that if a goy is going to come along and break the stone, it'll be full of notches, and it can't be, has to be smooth stones. So the Gemara says, well, even that, there's a solution in Sirinu. Why not smooth down the stones? Let's take some metal planes and shave the stones, so to speak, with these metal implements to smooth them out. And so why is it that you say they can't be reused? Have a goy come, break the stones, and then sand them down and use them for the reconstruction of the altar. The Gemara says that's not an option. Lo sonif aleim barzel amarachmona. The Torah says that one shall not place upon the stones used for the altar any metal. So there's no option in smoothing them out. Now the Gemara asks, we have a semicolon here because this question is not a direct flow of the attempted suggestions for reinstating the stones for the altar, but a more general question. And it's a long question. We have a length indicator to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. And the question here is why did they bury the stones in that lishka that we referred to above, in that office in the Azora? Could they not have had the stones voided and then take those stones for their personal use, for common use? Why were they buried? Lizberinu, let a goy come along and break them and thereby void it from the Avodah Zorah status. V'lishkalinu l'nafshayu, let them then take the stones for their own personal use. Mi, loy, omar, and if you skip the bracketed section, you'll come to the correct way of phrasing the question. Within the brackets, there's a loshon, a version that needs fixing. So the question appears after the brackets, and we're saying, is it not so that Abaye says, that the reading then would be, mi, lo, omar, and then skip Abaye. Is it not that Abaye says, Bikshu lignos dinra hadriano tu raino shifa mitnei tivo shiushalayim? At shemotzu lo mikro min haTorah shemuter ubol ba pritzim v'chaluluha. The halacha of Abaye indicates that there was this thought that maybe a certain coinage should be forbidden in anticipation of it being coinage that was once of a hektish source, of a Beis Hamikdash source, and coins that were dedicated to the Beis Hamikdash would have carried with them a prohibition insofar as that they were dedicated for the temple. So if these kinds of coins were found outside of the temple, Abaye suggested that historically there was an attempt to render the coins forbidden. until they found an allowance, a heter from the Torah. The pasuk, actually, the pasuk that we cited before, that Ubalba preached in Chalul, when the goyim, when there's stuff that's booty as part of a Gentile conquest, that booty, even if it had been of a holy nature, loses its holy status. And hence, if you find coins that were once of Beis Hamikdash, once dedicated to the Beis Hamikdash, those coins would be allowed because they were part of a military conquest accomplished by Gentiles. So the question here is, why could these stones that were used for the temple altar not also be, why couldn't they also be taken for private use? Let's go over the Gemara again with the bracketed section. Ve'amai, why was it necessary for the Beis Hashmonai to bury the stones that were defiled by the Greeks? Lisperinu, v'lishkilin of Shail. Why don't they have the stones broken by a Gentile, thereby voiding the stones from their idolatrous status, and then let them take the stones for their personal use? Mi lo omar Rav Hoshaya, was it not once taught by Rav Hoshaya? Bikshu lignois kol kesef vizov sheba oilam, that they kaspa vidavo shel Yerushalayim. There was once a thought to bury all silver and gold coinage of the world, because it might have come from the silver and gold of Yerushalayim. The Havinon Ba, and we ask concerning Rav Hoshaya's suggestion, Yerushalayim Hav Yeruba Di Alma, does Yerushalayim constitute the majority of coinage of the world? Why would one think that if one finds gold or silver coins in New Delhi or in Tokyo, that those coins should be forbidden in anticipation of them possibly having originated in Yerushalayim, where in fact the coinage was most likely dedicated to the temple, and that would be usur? But why should one suspect that coinage found throughout the world is coinage that originated in Yerushalayim? Does Yerushalayim constitute the majority of the world? Elo Omar Abaye, rather Abaye refines the question, or refines this issue of coinage as follows. Bikshu lignos dinra is a type of coin, a dinner coin. Hadriano turaino shifa. Shifa means rubbed out. We could say old Hadrian or Turaini coinage. Those coins, most of them were minted and used in Yerushalayim. So if one finds these Hadrian or Turaino dinar coins, old ones, you find them in Amsterdam, or you find them in New York, you have reason to suspect, Mipnei, the Gemara goes on, Mipnei Tivos Yerushalayim, that if you find these old coins somewhere, maybe you should suspect that they are coinage that was from Yerushalayim. And if it were from Yerushalayim, then it was in all likelihood dedicated to the temple. So you're finding, in theory, you're finding temple dedicated coins. If they're the Hadrian or Turaino dinar coins, if you're finding them somewhere else, very likely they came from Yerushalayim, and therefore maybe you should treat them with holiness and restrict their use. Until they found a pasuk indicating that those coins are allowed. What's the pasuk that indicates those coins are allowed? Ubalba pritzim v'chalua. They came in, the evil ones came in, and chalua, and they rendered it common. They rendered it unholy. In other words, at the point that the Beis HaMikdash was plundered, all of the wealth, all of the coinage that was part of the Beis HaMikdash treasury, all of these Hadrian or Turaino coins, they lost their Hegdish status. And as such, they are allowed. So that if you find old Hadrian or Turaino coins anywhere in the world, even if they originated in Yerushalayim, nevertheless, they would be allowed. So what do we see from all of this information that formed this long question? Why don't we say the same thing with regard to the temple's altar stones? The Goyim came, plundered it. As a result of their plundering, they lost their holy status. Why couldn't you now take the stones and use it for your personal use? Why was it necessary to have them buried? The Gemara answers, Hosam lo ishtam shibu legavoah. In the case of the coins were not used in serving Hashem yet. Those coins were set aside to buy things that would eventually be used in the service of Hashem, but they weren't part of the service of Hashem. They weren't used in the service of the Almighty. Hacha, in the case of the stones of the Mizbeach, Kevon dishtamish behu legavoah, since they were used in actual service of the Almighty in the offering of sacrifices, lav orach aro dishtamushi behu hedyota. It's not a proper etiquette. It's not derech eretz. Orach aro is derech eretz, or we'll call it etiquette, or properness, propriety, to use them for common use. And that's why they were buried and put out of use altogether. The Mishnah. A Gentile is capable of voiding his idol and the idol of his friend, of a fellow Gentile. The Yisrael, a Jew, a Jew cannot void the idol of a Gentile. Hamavatil avodis kochavim mevatil mishamshel. One who voids an idol, he thereby voids the service vessels that were used for that idol. Bitel mishamshel. If a person voided, if a Gentile voided the service vessels, mishamshin mutoran, the service vessels become allowed. Vehi asur, but the original idol remains forbidden. Before we go further in the Gemara, let's take a look at the Nosei, the topic heading, Hesber Mokor Beinyan Goy Hamavatil Avodazora Shel Yisrael. We're going to be preoccupied with explaining a source that deals with a Gentile voiding the idol owned by a Jew. From the Mishnah, we got the impression that a Gentile can void his own idol and his friend's idol, but not a Jew's idol. Let's see the Gemara now. Masni lei Rebbe, the Reb Shimon Brei. Rebbe Yudah Nasi was teaching his son, Rebbe Shimon, the following source. Oyvei kechavim mevatel avodis kechavim shelo v'shel chavero. Before we go any further, let's take note of the diamonds that appear. We have a Roman numeral number 1 and a diamond to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara. This is the first of 3 stages. We're going to see, and we have this indicated under our Mivneh heading, in the outside margin we have a diamond featured. Gimel L'shoinois, 3 versions. Alma Omar Rav Hillel es Hesbero. Concerning what did Rav Hillel say, his explanation, where he gives an answer that the Gemara, in the 3 different versions of the Gemara, you will see the same Hesber being used, and we want to know what it's going on. And he says the following sentence, Lo nitzrucha sheyesh loy ba shutfus, that the particular teaching will be needed to be taught in the context of something where there was a partnership, where the Jew and a Gentile were partners in an idol. And there will be 3 different versions of what to apply that statement to. So we begin this Gemara after we see, now Rebbe is teaching his son a source. The source says, Oyvei kechavim mevatel avodis kechavim shelo v'shel chavero, that a Gentile can cancel the idol that he owns and that his friend owns. Omar Lei, Rebbe Shimon, turns to his father and says, Rebbe, shonis lanu bialdusech, you taught us in your youth the following source. Oyvei kechavim mevatel avodis kechavim sheloi v'shel Yisrael. In your youth you taught us that a Gentile could void his own idol and a Jew's idol. Now on that, a question. The Yisrael, mi kol mevatlo, a Jewish-owned idol, does that lend itself to being voided? V'ha v'som b'seisir k'siv. There's a pasuk that says that it shall be buried, it shall be put away, indicating that a Jewish-owned idol resists voiding. Omar of Hillel, Bray de Rebbe Valis, Lo Nitzricha, the teaching that was taught in his youth, that a goy is mevatel shel Yisrael, concerns the following, Sheyesh loy bo shutfus. Taking a look at the Rashi, the Rashi we will actually look at in a moment, but first we'll read the Gemara. The teaching of Rebbe in his youth concerned, according to Rav Hillel, an idol owned jointly by a goy, by a Gentile, and a Jew. He taught that only in his youth, but when he became older, he ceased to teach that. He turned away. He backed out of that particular teaching. So the Gemara here presents what he thought when he was young, and the change of mind explains his change of mind. Continuing in the Gemara, Aleph. Bialduso my kosovar, beis uvizikniso my kosovar. What did he think in his youth when he taught that a goy could abandon, could void the idol jointly held? And what did he think in his old age when he backed out of that? Bialduso sovar, Yisrael adaita devikuchovim polach. That a Jew, when worshipping an idol, he's doing it with the approval of the Gentile. He has a partner. The Jew has a partner in this idol, the Gentile. And the entire Jew's affinity and connection with the idol is really with the approval of the goy. In other words, he's subordinate, in a sense, to the Gentile partner and serves it only because his friend, the Gentile, is serving it. And that's what it means here. Yisrael adaita levikom polach. Kiva levikovim mevato denafshei. And therefore, once the idol worshiper, the Gentile, voids his own holding in it, the Yisrael nami mevatlo, the Jewish holding also becomes voided. However, ubezikmuso savar, in his old age, in his adulthood, or his change of mind, Rebbe felt Yisrael adaita denafshei polach. The Jew is worshipping the idol that he owns jointly with the goy on his own volition, having nothing to do with the approval of his goyish friend. Ki mevatel vikachovim denafshei, when the Gentile voids his holding in it, the Yisrael lo batil, the Jew's holding does not become voided. The Rashi at the second line from the bottom says, "Sheesh lo levikohovim boshufis ubezeknuso chozarbo." In his old age, Rebbe backed out. The afalgav sheesh lo shutfis, even though he has a partnership in it, even though the Gentile has a partnership with a Jew in this idol, eno yochol levatel chelko yishal Yisrael. The Gentile cannot any longer void the portion owned by the Jew. The Gemara goes on with another version, Iko demasni lo asefa. There are those that teach the teaching of Rav Hillel on the seifa. Yisrael eino mevatel ovid ischovim shel ovid kechovim. This is the continuation of the Mishnah. This is what we labeled beis in the Mishnah, that a Jew cannot undo the idol owned by a Gentile. The Gemara asks Pshita, of course. How in the world would you think that a Jew could void a Gentile-owned idol? Omer of Hillel, Brei de Rebbe Valis, Lo Nitzrucha Elo. This teaching of the Mishnah concerns Sheyesh Loi Bo Shutfis, that the Jew has a holding in the idol. In other words, a Jew and a Gentile have a joint holding in a particular idol. The Kamash Malon, and the Mishnah is teaching me, Yisrael Hu Delo Mevatel De'ovi Kechovim. The Jew cannot void the portion owned by the goy. He certainly can't void his own portion, but the Jew cannot void the portion owned by the goy either. Avol oivei kechovim dinafshei mevatel. However, the inference is that the Gentile could void his portion of the idol. And we have a little star focusing on a point in Rashi, this first narrow line. You can see the lo amrinon, and we don't say the following. We don't say, ki hechi dechelko Yisrael lo batil, chelik shalevi kohavim nami lo batil. We don't say that just like the Jewish portion cannot become voided, the Gentile portion likewise cannot become voided, because in conclusion we say that the Gentile portion, if the Gentile himself voids it, does become voided. And finally, ikodemasni lo abraisa, a third version of the of what Rav Hillel is going on is has it going on a brisa. The source you can see in a frame. Rav Shimon Menashe Omer, Avodas Kochavim Shel Yisrael Ein Lo Betela Oilomis. This brisa, according to Rav Shimon, says that an idol owned by a Jew has no bittul, has no voiding forever. My olamis. What's the emphasis of this word ever, forever? Amar Rav Hillel, Breda Rabbi Valis, Lo nitzurcha ela sheyesh loy loivikichovim bo shutfis. We're talking about an idol that's jointly owned. Jew and Gentile owned the idol, and where the what this is telling us is that even if the goy is mevatel his chelik, even if the goy, the Gentile, is mevatel his portion, the portion owned by the Jew has no voiding. The Kamash Malan, and we are informed, the Israel adaita de nafshe polach, that the Jew, when he serves the idol, he does so with on his own volition, and he's not dependent on the goy's, on the Gentile's mindset. Therefore, if the Gentile does void his own holding in the idol, it will have no effect on the Jewish portion. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.